I've got a couple of passages from Genesis about Joseph. So I'll just talk. No, that sounds like it's being amplified. So I've got Genesis 37, 28 to 36, and then jumping ahead a little bit to 39, 1 to 6. So when the Midianite merchants came by, his brothers pulled Joseph up out of the cistern and sold him for 20 shekels of silver, which is about $375, to the Ishmaelites, who took him to Egypt. When Reuben returned to the cistern and saw that Joseph was not there, he tore his clothes. He went back to his brothers and said, "The boy isn't there. Where can I turn now?" Then they got Joseph's robe, slaughtered a goat, and dripped the robe in the blood. Then they took the ornate robe back to their father and said, "We found this. Examine it to see whether it's your son's robe." He recognized it and said, "It is my son's robe. Some ferocious animal has devoured him. Joseph has surely been torn to pieces." Then Jacob tore his clothes, put on sackcloth, and mourned for his son many days. All his sons and daughters came to comfort him, but he refused to be comforted. "No," he said, "I'll continue to mourn until I join my son in the grave." So his father wept for him. Meanwhile, the Midianites sold Joseph in Egypt to Potiphar, one of Pharaoh's officials, the captain of the guard. Now Joseph had been taken down to Egypt. Potiphar, an Egyptian who was one of Pharaoh's officials, the captain of the guard, bought him from the Ishmaelites who had taken him there. The Lord was with Joseph so that he prospered, and he lived in the house of his Egyptian master. When his master saw that the Lord was with him and that the Lord gave him success in everything he did, Joseph found favour in his eyes and became his attendant. Potiphar put him in charge of his household, and he entrusted to his care everything he owned. From the time he put him in charge of his household and of all that he owned, the Lord blessed the household of the Egyptian because of Joseph. The blessing of the Lord was on everything Potiphar had, both in the house and in the field. So Potiphar left everything he had in Joseph's care. With Joseph in charge, he did not concern himself with anything except the food that he ate. This is the word of the Lord. Thanks be to God.
It's good to be here. Nice to see you all. I'm BJ. If you don't know me, that's fine. I'm BJ. Been coming here for a little while, about 14 odd years or something, and got married to my wife Rebecca over here, and she's been here all her life, so it's hard to leave once you get in. So if you're thinking about going, go now, because you'll be stuck. But in all honesty, it's like different flavours of the same thing, eh? You know, like I grew up in a kind of prezzy Methodist real mess of a church, and then turned up here and I was like, oh, Anglicans, this is a bit weird, but actually we all believe in Jesus and we all love him. And then there's lots of other stuff that happens, but most of the important stuff is right. So we're good. That's kind of how I view it. And I think the longer I'm alive, the more I realise that there's so many different kind of, what's the word? Oh, differences, eh? Flavours. We adapt. I'm the different person to what I was 20 years ago, but less hair and a few more lines and things. My four-year-old loves, like, running her fingers up and down the wrinkles on my head, like corrugated cardboard. But, you know, that's all right. I'm not sure why I'm talking about that right now. I think Davis's intro was quite neat. He asked about fun facts or random facts. Does anyone want to share a random fact they learnt this morning? I don't think anyone did it. Oh, yes, here we go. Praying mantises are not natives, so we should kill them. Like I said, Anglicans. sorry. Well, the fun fact that I heard was that, you know, rocking horses, the ones that you rock on, not real horses, they can't poo. Rocking horses can't poo. So I think I actually told my daughter that fact, actually. So anyway, right. Okay, so Mike, thanks for your reading. Where is he gone? I don't know where he's gone. Thanks for the reading this morning. So we are looking at the story of Joseph. And for those of us who were here last week, we kicked off with Sam, did a primo intro into Joseph, and that was really, really cool. And he kind of gave us a bit of a background of the beginnings of Joseph and his and what happened before him. He talked a bit around the dysfunction in his family, the fact that Joseph was the favorite son of Jacob. Number 11 of 12, but he was the favorite son. That's why he got the fancy coat. And even the dysfunction back a generation where Jacob, his father, was not the favorite son of Isaac. Am I right? I've got the generations, the names. I can't remember. So there's all this stuff that's gone on before, but that's kind of where we were last week. And so this week, we are kind of kicking off with the dream side of things. That's where Sam kind of ended, about this dream that Joseph has about the sheaves of corn. And they all bow down to Joseph's sheaf, and he wonders why his brothers don't like him and hate him more. And then he goes, oh, there's another dream about the sun and the moon and the stars all bowing down to me as well. So it just goes on and on. I'm not much of a dreamer. Has anyone here do the dream thing? Like cool dreams and God speaks, yeah? Yeah, well, you have to share, but that's great. But one dream I do remember, my wife probably remembers it more. I don't know how long ago it was, but have you had a dream where you're kind of physically doing something? Is it just me? I'm quite an active person, so resting for me is like cutting firewood or mowing lawns or building a house on the weekend or something. So that's just who I am. So when I'm sleeping, I'm kind of active too. So I remember having this dream a while ago, and I can't, you know, when you get in a dream and then you kind of get into that wakeful part where you're sort of awake but you're still asleep, and then you're questioning why you're acting like you are in your awake mind, but your body's still asleep. So for some reason, I'm sitting on the end of my bed in me jammies, and I'm putting my hands up in the air, jibbing a ceiling, but I'm not wearing much. And then I have that moment where I wake up and I'm like, what the heck, have I got no clothes on at work? Anyway, that was my version of dream. And my interpretation of that is not at all holy or anything. It's just probably don't drink so much coffee in the evening so you actually sleep and like go into that sleep cycle. But I still haven't figured out how to be mature enough to not drink coffee. So still very much there. Anyway, that has nothing to do with the way Joseph interpreted dreams, but it was just a funny story. So Mike's reading started us off. Joseph's been hated on by his brothers. They throw him into the pit, and then he goes from there. He's sold by the Ishmaelites, travels down to Egypt, and is sold to Potiphar, who is obviously a pretty high up dude in the military down there, and he becomes a slave in Potiphar's house. I couldn't really get Mike to keep reading, although it was great. There's heaps more going on in that story that we didn't touch on, and so today I'm kind of going to give us a bit of a snapshot from that moment of the pit, ending up in the pit, and then the next little bit after the verse that Mike stopped reading on was where it gets a little bit saucy, and it talks about Joseph being handsome, and then Potiphar's wife being quite keen on Joseph and trying to get him to do the dirty and stuff, and then he goes, no, I won't do that, and so then the outcome of that is Joseph then ends up in prison. And then the outcome of that is God then builds him from that place, and he ends up in the palace. Now, if you don't know any of the story, read Genesis. There's about 11 odd chapters that are like committed to Joseph, which is quite interesting in itself. The Bible's huge, and there's so many characters in it, but 11 chapters of Genesis get to focus in on Joseph. One of the really cool things about doing this occasionally at church, speaking at church, is that it forces you to read a bit more and try and get a bit more in-depth into what's going on. And there's so many angles and so many areas that this piece of scripture covers, and I can't possibly do justice to all of it, but I'm just going to do a bit of a flyover. And I think one of the key reasons that that God has put 11 chapters of the story of Joseph in front of us is the fact that If you read the story, and the beauty we have is we're kind of like a topical view. We're looking down. We can see the start of Joseph's life, and we know the end game, and then we know what happens as far as, you know, that his family become the Hebrew nation, which then eventually becomes so big the Egyptians enslave them. Moses turns up, let my people go. Exodus, da 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 da. People of Israel are formed, chosen people of God. Old Testament, carry on. Right. So we know that when we glimpse the little bit of Joseph, but I think, what I'd like to say is I think that what God is doing in this is he's giving us key points throughout these few verses that we're going to look at today of where he intervenes in Joseph's life. And I think the neat thing that for me with that is that it shows that God is super involved and super concerned about us as individuals. It's not just the narration of this massive story that has to happen throughout history to end up at Jesus' feet. He's actually concerned about the individual. So I think if we can try and hold that kind of thinking, is that all right this morning as we open this up a little bit? Because I really feel that the flip side of that is then what is God saying to us personally? So yeah, I think the big key thing for me that I've discovered over reading this passage a wee bit over the last few months is that God is intimately worried and concerned about us as individuals and wants to be part of our daily lives, not just the big picture, but the individual stuff as well. I've lost my notes. So next week, Andrew's going to fix everything that I say wrong this week. So he gets the third week. So Sam started, he did well. I'm the middle, and then Andrew will just do the tidy up. So anything that you don't like today, he's promised he'll... Yeah, all good? Yep, sweet. He'll sort it out tomorrow. Next week, sorry. So gives me a bit of a free rein. But there's kind of... And this is going to be relatively short and sweet today. I wasn't sure if we had kids in or not, so I'm just going to use that as my excuse for not having hours of talking. To be honest, once I start, after about 10 minutes, there's no point carrying on. It's all ramble. So we'll just get into it. So there's kind of three points that I want us to kind of pick out of the passage today. And the first point is that God is near. So despite the fact that Joseph's brothers, who should love him and should, you know, appreciate him at least a little bit, even if you don't love your brother, me and my brother didn't get on very well. We fought like cats and dogs, but he never sold me or made out that I was dead. He might have wanted to. He used to tie me up and, you know, I won't go too far. We had a trampoline we put by the shed roof, and he thought it would be cool to, my dad, this is a dumb thing to do. Don't do this if you're a dad. Don't tell your children not to tie each other up and then drive out the gate. Whatever you do, don't tie each other up. What are we going to do? We're going to tie each other up. You know. So you imagine tied up like a turkey and then whoosh, off the roof onto the trampoline, but kind of got the physics wrong. Bang! The big bar part, you know. We didn't have fences. Yeah. Anyway, obviously I'm still working through that trauma. Yeah. We get on really well now, so that's all right. And again, he hasn't tried to bury me or anything. But yeah, the point that even though Joseph's brothers like totally treated him terribly, he's put in this place of a slave when he's come from favoritism and the life of luxury. And I don't imagine he did much work at home. He probably just sat in his tent and played the PlayStation or something while all the other guys were doing the work. He then goes right down into this horrible space. But what you'd notice is in chapter that Mike read in chapter 39, verse 2, it says that the Lord was with Joseph and he prospered, even in that place of a slave. And it seems like, that just seems like a bit of an odd thing to be going on. But in my mind, what that's doing is it's showing us as readers that God is really concerned about the daily life of Joseph and he wants to keep working with him and he's with him and he's showing him what he's got all the way through. And then a few verses on in that same little passage, it says, from the time he put him in charge, God blessed his household. Mike read really well that whole picture of like everything that Joseph touched basically worked for Pharaoh. For Potiphar. So Potiphar's like, here you go, here's some more control, here's some more stuff. And so even though he's a slave, he's been blessed and God is blessing him and he's being allowed to move up and up and up into these different roles. And then the part that we didn't read, the next little bit, is that he goes down again, right? When the whole seduction process doesn't work out so well. Well, does probably work out better than it could have if it went the other way. But anyway, and so Joseph goes that way. So we can see that there are some shocking things that happen time and again to Joseph, but we can also see the recurring theme of God always being near to him. God is concerned and cares about each of our lives, and it's like this. Scripture shows me or points to me that he's really concerned about the small steps, the things along the way, like even in those moments of hardness, God was blessing Joseph, and the hard stuff and the blessings. There's a verse in Psalm 121, verse 3, he will not let your foot slip. He who watches over you will slumber. And that's just a promise that God never forsakes his own, that he loves us and he holds us and he's near us even when we don't see it. Especially when we don't see it. That's point one. The second point is we have the opportunity to grow in challenge. Most of us don't really like challenge. I don't particularly like it that much. I quite like getting into a comfortable space and sitting there, when you know what's going on. But we can grow in challenge. We have the opportunity to grow in the challenges that life throws at us. Joseph started out as an arrogant, probably. I imagine it probably implies he's quite an arrogant young man who's got everything at his feet and dad's favourite, and he can go rat on his brothers, like Sam was telling us last week, and they'll get in trouble, but he'll be all good, and he won't get his PlayStation taken off him, but he'll just be able to keep having his fun time. And so he kind of has this kind of arrogant thing going on, but as he's developed and as these hard things are happening in his life, he rises to those challenges, and I'm sure that arrogance was broken away. There's no way you could go through the stuff he went through without some change happening to him. So the scene where Potiphar's wife tries to seduce Joseph, this is Joseph's response to that whole kind of process. He says in chapter 39, verse 9, "My master has withheld nothing from me except you, Potiphar's wife, because you are his wife. How could I do such a wicked thing and sin against God?" And it's quite interesting because the God of the Egyptians is not the God of Joseph. But Joseph he does it repeatedly, if you go home and read the whole story. He does it repeatedly where he says to the Egyptians, God. He uses his God, which is awesome. He's faithful to his own God, despite being in a foreign land and treated as a slave or a prisoner. And so over and over again, he says, how could I do such a wicked thing and sin against God? And I'm sure in that moment, Joseph must have kind of thought through what the outcome of that statement was going to be. How could it possibly work out good for him? There's no way that his scorned wife was not going to have a go at him and end up putting him in some place worse than he was already. But he still remained faithful. Joseph just chose to grow into that challenge and chose to be faithful to God in that moment. And then the third point that I want to touch on is just the fact that God's plan wins. Now, we don't get to the end game of Joseph's story. That's Andrew's fun part for next week. But even in the ups and downs of what we see today in this story, God's plan always wins. It doesn't look like what we expect it to look like, but it wins. Despite the missteps along the way, God sees his plans through. We often don't understand why certain things happen in our lives or how the challenges are possibly going to lead us to a good outcome. And some of the things that must have happened through to Joseph, these are just some of the things I've listed that are the way that the world or his family or just his circumstance must have made him feel. Definitely rejected by his brothers, thrown into a pit by his brothers, assumed dead by his father, tempted by Potiphar's wife, falsely accused by her, and then exiled into prison. So all of these things are just things that happened to Joseph really without his doing. He didn't ask for this stuff. Yeah, he might have been a smart aleck, but he didn't ask for this stuff to happen to him. This was just things. He had this dream that God was going to do something big with him. That's why he had this dream about the sheaves of corn and the sun, the moon, and stars. But all through his life, this stuff kept going on, and it must have been difficult to see where God could be in all of that. We can take heart from Joseph's story that God knows us and he is on our side, cheering us on. In Deuteronomy 31, verse 8, it says, "The Lord himself goes before you, and he will be with you, and he will never leave you, nor will he forsake you." Do you want to... Oh, no, not yet. Dot, sorry. Hold off. Got some stones here. Whole lot of stones, quite a lot of stones. I went down to the river yesterday with my boy Josiah, and we threw some stones and ran with the dog and rode bikes and stuff, but we also collected a whole lot of these. Just common river stones. And thanks to Mike, I've learned a little bit about stones and rocks this week. These are actually, do you know what these are called? What the actual real technical rock geek name is? No? Greywacke, yeah, well done. Greywacke, there you go, you learned something today. Yeah, so they're called Greywacke. These come from Greywacke Rock. Now, Greywacke Rock doesn't start like this, obviously. This has been bounced around the Manawatu River from either the Tararua or the Ruahine Ranges, and it's travelled a long way to get to here. There's often different colours, different shapes. I'm not going to get too technical. Mike, you have to forgive me, because he'll be able to tell you from there what exactly the composition is of all these things and stuff like that. But I'm just going to stick to Greywacke, because that's the extent of my rock knowledge. But the point I'm trying to make here with these stones is that they're all kind of smoothened off. They kind of got rounded edges. Some of them have got a few bumps and grazes on them. They may have a few, like this one's quite cool. Probably can't see from there. You're going to get a chance to look at these and take one home soon. But not throw them. You can't throw stones. It's not okay. And they've got some of them still got lines and different colours and things. But the point is that these stones have been on a heck of a journey. So they would have started up in the... Oh, you can? Yeah, put that picture up, eh, Dot? There you go. That's literally these stones. But go to that other one. I got told I had to use the one with the loader on it. Oh, there you go. Look at that. So that's... So that's a quarry. I think that's an Otaki, that one. And so that's kind of, the rocks in the background are kind of like this stuff. Before it's, Mike, I'm really butchering your presentation, mate. You have to forgive me. But anyway, for the point of what I'm trying to make, I think this will work, I'm hoping. But you know, they get cut off the face of the cliff and they look like this. This is where the Greywacke starts, right? So it's got lots of random colours and shapes and annular bits and lumpy chunks and stuff. But then over the period of time, however long it's got to be, they bounce down the river, they get smashed by storms, they get buried under land, they get lifted again, the wind sweeps across, and eventually, I don't know how many years it takes, but eventually they end up, you know, like this or something. So all of those sharp edges, all of the damaged bits all kind of get busted off, the weak edges fall away, and only the hard stone is left. And I guess when I think of that, I think of Joseph and all of the trials and things he went through, the rejection he felt with bits and pieces getting knocked off his life, arrogance got busted off probably pretty early on, I'd say, when he went into that first pit and then he had to stand nutty on a thing to be sold as a slave. That would have probably changed his view of himself a little bit. But life happens and damage happens and things happen. And then the other thing is that as we travel along the journey, we bump up to one another. And so we're knocked around and we're buried and we're under pressure, and good and bad things are happening all the times in our lives. So what I thought we would do is I want to pass these around. Is my lovely assistant going to help? Oh, Davis, you can be a lovely assistant too. Yeah, mate. This is the loveliest assistant. Yeah. You can have a look at these ones, but don't take them. But take one of the small guys, and then the worship team are just going to come and do a bit of quiet music while we do a thing. So, the kind of point really is to hang on to those stones and just look at them and feel them and see the different shades of colour, the different the shapes they are, the damaged edges and things like that. And I kind of want us to take a few moments to just sort of sit and think around what life to this point has meant for each of us. And some of us have gone through some real hard-out trials, and some of us have had a pretty, what we'd consider pretty stable point up to this point. But life is life, and there's hard stuff that goes on. And some of these things might be words that you feel about yourself, or the way the world's made you feel, the way your parents might have said things over your life, or teachers, or bosses or siblings or anything like that. There may be some stuff that you're dealing with or have sitting in your heart that's just holding you. And these are the things that God says that God's done for each of us, like he did for Joseph. So this is what he's done with rejection. He's turned it into redemption. He's taken him from the pit to the palace. What was dead has been delivered. When Joseph was tempted, God trusted him. When he was accused falsely, God knew the facts of that. And when he was exiled, God elevated him. So I just would love us to spend a few minutes just in in the space you're in. I don't mind if you want to talk to someone beside you if you want to. But the whole point really is to just take a reflection of life to this point. And either there may be brokenness, you might be feeling pain in this moment, or you might be feeling joy, and you might just, it might be an opportunity for you to just thank God for the many blessings in your life. But the point is to try and go, where can I see God? If I look topically at my life, like we've been able to with Joseph right now, and see the highs and the lows. Sometimes in the low point, we can't see while we're in it where God's at. But often when we look back now, we can see that God was near us. So just take a few moments while the worship team just do some jamming, and then I'll pray, and then we'll sing, and there'll be opportunity for prayer after that.